you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
You're listening to Sci-Fi Wire's 22 Days of Marvel. On today's episode, we're talking about Captain America Civil War. Stay tuned. Hey everyone, and welcome to Sci-Fi Wire's 22 Days of Marvel podcast. I'm today's moderator, Danny Roth. On this podcast, we are counting down to the release of Avengers Endgame by revisiting all the movies of the Marvel Cinematic Universe one day at a time. Each day we tackle a different movie, re-explore the plot, call out the best scenes and dialogue, and most importantly, track all the connections across these 22 movies and what clues give us a hint of what might happen in Avengers Endgame. And finally, what makes this podcast most exciting is our hosts. We're all massive fans of the MCU at Sci-Fi Wire, so this podcast will be hosted by a rotating cast of Sci-Fi Wire staff. Some you've heard before, some you haven't. We're going to geek out from the inner sanctum from Wire HQ straight to the podcast platform of your choice. So let's jump right in with today's co-hosts. I've got right in front of me producer Megan Dineen and the co-host of the Strong Female Characters podcast over at Sci-Fi Fangirls, Preeti Chibber. Hi, friends.
Hello.
Hi.
I just put all of the energy that I had into that intro.
Yeah,
and
that,
now
was,
it's
that
over.
Was incredible, honestly.
That was, thank you.
It was
you.
Really full of passion, and now I feel like my energy levels aren't where they need to be.
Get on my level.
I'm working on it.
So, all right, we're going to talk about Captain America Civil War. As people may or may not remember, this is the start of Phase 3. We're kind of fresh off of the whole Age of Ultron and also, I guess, Ant-Man experience. And now we're getting what is sort of commonly referred to as Avengers 2.5. What do we... oh, you know what? Actually, before we talk about that, we should introduce our good friend, Warvis.
You called me a good friend. Aw, thanks, Danny.
Who is like Jarvis, except not.
Wait, so have we inserted an Infinity Stone into Warvis's head yet?
That's a great question. I'll tell you, I think that Warvis has got a very special stone. It's the Therapy Stone.
Oh, I see what's going on. If I've got a Therapy Stone, then you got a Kidney Stone. So there's that.
Oh.
Wait, can I ask what color it is?
It's rainbow colored.
Yay!
Is it rainbow colored? All
Therapy
right.
would be a rainbow.
No, it's black. Like the dark depths of my soul.
This very brilliant robot gentleman. His name is Warvis. He's going to sort of keep things abreast, make sure that we know what's happening in the world. Marvel, he knows everything, and also my therapist, obviously. Hello, Warvis.
Hi, Warvis.
Hi.
Hello, and thank you for calling me a robot gentleman. We're cool, Danny. We're cool.
So I don't. Is there really a lot to say about Ant-Man? I think the conversation is really more Age of Ultron. This movie is really kind of a lead off of that, right? Sokovia went down, literally. There was that whole Ultron thing where Tony Stark thought it was a good idea to make a sentient robot army to keep people safe.
Well, so before we get into that, I'm just going to preface this by saying that I have not actually seen an Avengers movie before. And for some reason, like a rational human being thought, going into Captain America Civil War, I should watch the first two Captain America movies, which helped me in not a significant way at all. I'm just going to be candid with you. By Winter Soldier, I was very confused because there was clearly several other plot lines that had been jammed into this movie. And then Civil War, I was just like, I don't know who half these people are. So there was a lot of Googling that happened.
But you got the Bucky stuff. And
oh,
that's,
no.
And that's very important.
That's kind of the key, the underlining, like, Cap storyline in Civil War is definitely all Winter Soldier Bucky influenced.
For sure. And I followed all that. I think it was like the other people. They're like all of a sudden there's like 37 characters. They're all doing stuff. It's like they've all went to sleepaway camp and I missed out on some like fun conversation they had around a fire. And...
Yeah, but the good news is the hot boys having their man feelings. You got that. And that's I mean, if we were going to single out one thing that is very enjoyable.
Nope, I hear I hear a sound of disagreement.
Oh, really? I mean, I are you against Cap and Bucky's like respective mutual man pain?
No, I actually thought you were referring to Tony Stark as a hot boy, and that's where my sound of disagreement came from.
At this point, it's kind of hard to be in his corner, but so we should talk about that because that's sort of the whole thing that you have to understand. That's not Steve and Bucky having hot boy feelings for each other. The thing that's not that is that Tony fucked up.
Language.
Real bad.
Real bad.
As bad as someone could do. It is the whole reason that Age of Ultron exists. That whole storyline is because he done messed up bad and a whole country got obliterated. All of humanity could have been lost to robot fascism.
Wait, hold on. So that's what happens in Ultron? Like, an entire country just disappears?
It gets destroyed. Like, it gets lifted up into the air and then dropped.
Wow. So, then it being called the Sokovia Accord suddenly makes a lot more sense.
Yes.
I'm glad we could help.
It's all coming together.
So basically, that's the thing that's happening textually, but also metatextually, there's this other conversation that's kind of happening, which is that we've now had two Avengers movies where our heroes blow a lot of shit up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's cool, though. They're the Avengers. And people are writing articles about that. And Preeti, you and I talked about this last night, that also Man of Steel, there were a lot of articles coming out talking about how we're supposed to see Superman as a hero, but he's just blowing through buildings like there's not people in those buildings.
Yeah, there was like this huge like movement for destruction porn at some point. And like, I think that's a great metatextual thing to include in this movie. However, I don't know that they did it as well as they could have.
Yeah, I mean, I understand why they embraced that idea. It's interesting. Yeah, I mean, the destruction porn, I feel like what happened there was, when was that stuff coming out? Age of Ultron, 2015. You know, I think once we got a decade out from 9/11 and everybody had, because for a really long time, you weren't seeing that stuff at all, right? People felt very uncomfortable with that stuff.
They changed the ending of Spider-Man 2, right?
The first Spider-Man had in the trailers, you literally saw the Twin Towers in the very first movie. And then
they changed the ending of the first one. Right. It's like it like heavily influenced what we saw in these movies for such a long time.
Yeah. So I think about a decade out from there, things started to shift again. And certainly, all of a sudden everyone was really into stuff blowing up. And then we all remembered like, oh, wait, no. There are consequences to that.
Right.
Gosh.
This sucks.
This is not fun. This is kind of messed up. So that was happening. And then the other big thing that was happening, which I'm not sure how much the film is influenced by, but is a thing that people were really aware of, was that Joss Whedon was leaving. He was done. He was the Avengers guy. He had done Age of Ultron. Most people did not like that movie. Joss Whedon did not seem to like that movie. It was very quippy. It was kind of like way too like Joss phones it in the jossiest way possible.
Yep.
And so it feels like we're moving away from that with this movie. This is part of the reason we're getting an Avengers 2.5. It's almost like an Avengers 2 do-over.
Yeah, this movie was described to me as a secret Avengers movie. They were like, oh, Civil War? Yeah, like, secret Avengers movie. Like, it's basically to make up for Ultron.
Yeah, I actually forget that this is a Captain America movie.
Yeah, so that's happening. And then also there's the big deal with Sony, right? Which is that Spider-Man is finally going to be able to cross.
Yes!
And that's it. All right. Man, I wish I knew how Preeti felt about the Spider-Man arrival.
We'll get, you know what? Let's save that. We'll get to that.
We will.
I have opinions.
Okay.
They border on both sides of this
but
argument.
This is the big deal. This is the huge, huge, massive thing that everybody's so excited about is that for the first time ever, Spider-Man is going to actually exist alongside all the rest of these people. We've got a new actor in the role who is actually,
child.
Looks like a kid and actually kind of is a kid. So we're getting somebody that actually feels like the Peter Parker that people who read comics are familiar with.
Mm-hmm. So babyface Peter Parker.
I mean, many things. I mean, did Ditko really draw Peter Parker babyface in the beginning? I'm not sure I would go that far because Ditko's got some Ditko art. But
you just wanted to say Ditko.
I sure did, and I did it twice. So yeah, so that was the other thing that's happening. So these are all the events that are sort of leading into Civil War, and yes, also we've got the Winter Soldier stuff where Bucky is maybe remembering who he is, but he's still mm-hmm. got that metal arm. He's still kind of unpredictable. But Steve is holding out hope.
Yeah, but I kind of get that, like, we're at this point with when this movie comes out is that we've kind of gone away from the integrated storyline that people seem to love so much in Avengers. Ant-Man was kind of standalone. There's, like, only a handful of references in that movie. And then I would say that Guardians can kind of stand on its own to a degree. Like, you can drop into that movie.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You don't need to actually know anything. So I think this being sort of like a makeup Avengers movie is like the complete accurate way to describe it. It was like, they're like, we got to get back and give these people what they want, which was some comic book synergy.
I mean, I will say also this. I think that phase two on the whole is so off the rails that when you get back to phase three, it's sort of like when you have a conversation with somebody and they can't stay on topic and they mean to say one thing, but then they just trail off into 20 other conversations and go, where was I? Oh, right. Avengers.
That's literally every time I tell a story. So
relatable.
Yeah.
Relatable to your interests.
So the MCU is actually a...
it's just your life.
Yes.
Okay.
It's but a yeah, metaphor so yeah, for you me. Get
because it's like Iron Man 3 is its own thing. Thor of the Dark World is elves? Winter Soldier feels kind of centered, but Guardians is its own thing. Age of Ultron is a hot mess. And Ant-Man is also there, which also was very... big and complicated and had this whole thing about authorship and Lord. It's a whole other thing. Well, the only thing to know is, like, there's a guy, it's Paul Rudd, and he can make himself small.
He can get that's real it. Teeny tiny.
Yeah. He's 50 now.
He is
what
50.
What the hell?
It's
I'm
true.
Mad.
I was watching Ant-Man last night also, and there's, like, a scene where he doesn't have his shirt on, and my roommate just goes, is that what Paul Rudd actually looks like?
And hold on. That's what Paul Rudd actually looked like. For the film Ant-Man.
Yeah, no, like that's, I was like, to be clear, like that's, you know, grilled chicken and brown rice for like a regimen leading up to shooting. Yep. I'm sure Paul Rudd on a regular basis kind of has a little bit of like a pothead belly and he's just like chilling.
Yeah.
He's like your uncle drinking beers in the backyard.
But he can get to that.
Oh, of course he can.
That's what I know.
Which I appreciate.
Yeah, that's beyond me, well beyond me, and I'm not 50. But yeah, so he's there out in the world. That's the other thing to know. What is happening? What is the plot? I've talked a lot.
I can definitely start off because my beginning of the movie notes are extremely detailed. Like I'm studying for like a college test and then they really just become stream of consciousness towards the end. But I mean, we open in 1991 mm-hmm. And we see a little Bucky action. He's being tortured, though, and it made me sad.
Like, yeah.
That's kind of his thing, though.
I mean, it is kind of his thing. Like it was kind of hot torturing, but, you know.
His safe words aren't really good safe words. That's
no, they're
the problem.
Terrible safe words. I'm mad that he is clearly not allowed to wash his hair.
This is true. It's quite a travesty. Like that, those locks could be luxurious
he
if they just
amazing.
Let them.
Ugh.
Yeah, he doesn't have good hair again until 2018.
I just imagined running my fingers through it. Is that weird?
Nope, not weird.
It's very normal.
But that's like a quick blip. We kind of see that. It gives us a little context setting for the movie because there's aspects of that scene that will come back later and give us some idea of what's going on. But then we get into like this movie like opens up with action. Like within the first 10 minutes, we've got trucks blowing up. We've got villains with really poor names. Then we've got...
What's that name?
Oh, wait. Hold on. Okay, it's Crossbones. But Preeti, can you please describe to me how you get to Crossbones? Because
okay.
You can never remember his name.
I can never remember Crossbones' name. So it starts with Skullbone. Skullcross? No. Crossbones.
A crisscross will make you jump. No, that's not right.
Yeah.
It's a journey every time.
And I can follow that journey in my head. Like, Crossbones, that's literally, that is the name we come up with for a villain.
Are you a pirate?
Yeah, I don't like it. It's not good. I think it's because he's like a really angry straight guy. If he was like some kind of like really like Butch Bear situation that was going by that, that would be a different character though. And that's the kind of character that I want in that role. But instead we get this asshole and he's trying to get some technology, right? That's his whole shtick.
I mean, he's trying to get some like infectious disease type stuff.
Right.
And I was like, all right, I see biological weapons. That's what we're going for.
Mm-hmm.
Which, let's see, this movie came out, what, 2016?
This movie came out in 2016, yeah, so, and that is why I have had the same cold for the last 3 years.
Oh, okay.
It's Crossbones' fault.
I mean, everything is Crossbones' fault. So admittedly, I had to look her up, but Scarlet Witch, I was like, I had no idea who this person was, seeing as I hadn't seen an Avengers movie. Her regular name is quite odd to me.
Wanda Maximoff.
Yeah.
Maximon?
Maximon.
Oh, Danny just did the actual hand signals to that, too. Like, that's, I just...
Look, my name growing up was Daniel, and I grew up in the 1980s, so, you know, you get a lot of that.
I can imagine.
That was just the life I led.
We also see Falcon, little Anthony Mackie action, which I have no problem with. Black Widow, but it goes down, and I actually, like, in this scene, I really love the part where Black Widow's got the two guys and they're pointing the guns at her and he's like, I'll drop the biological weapon. And then she just, like, completely annihilates them. I'm like, yeah, I'm into this. Like, I'm into badass women.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice to see Nat be Nat during this scene. That's swell. It was a breath of fresh air after her being sad because her womb or whatever.
Speak not of such Nat.
I'm just saying that we don't, like, that's not happening, and that's swell.
It's great. Just let me watch Black Widow kick the hell out of, like, all of the bad guys.
Yes, I'm so into it. But then, like, but this scene kind of, it's funny, because this scene actually is almost like a precursor to, well, not a precursor, actually, that's a bad way to describe it, but this scene's a setup for what we were saying this movie is. It's like, we watch some stuff go down in this scene that kind of has some casualties of war, as you would say, or collateral damage. And so you kind of get immediately, like that scene, as we get through the scene and Crossbones tries to blow up Cap and Scarlet kind of flies him up and then through the building and realizes she's killed a bunch of people.
And specifically Wakandan people.
Well, we don't know that yet, but yes, we're going to find that out. But I gasped out loud. I was like, oh God, that's bad. Like, it's interesting. Like, mercenaries can drop dead for days and I'm fine with it. But then, like, all of a sudden people went through a building and I was like, well, that was a lot.
Well, you grew up in the era where most of the bad guys were secretly robots anyway, so it's fine. You just assume when it's bad guys, you're like, they're probably robots.
Hey, robot racism is real, Danny. It's a real thing.
What does that mean? I grew up in the era where most bad guys were robots.
Yeah. The 80s and 90s, a lot of cartoons where there were a lot of bad guys getting blown up, they were usually robots, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, you know what? You're right. Robots. That's true.
So I think you just kind of get into a place where you associate, like, or on G.I. Joe, what would happen is when the tanks would explode, you would still somehow magically see that the bad guys were running away from the tanks.
Okay, but so really quick, like, this is kind of where the start of my frustration with this movie, like, really, it really starts here because it's so one-sided and it kills me. I'm not going into a both sides issue, however.
Yeah, I was about to say, is this centrism?
I know.
Oh, God.
Chris Evans, where are you? But it kills me that there is absolutely no recognition of, like, well, what's the other option? What do they do if that truck comes barreling through to an infectious diseases institute?
No, you know, oh my God, it's so funny that you say this because there's this scene where when Crossbones first gets into the lab to try and get the actual, like, you know, whatever's in that vial. And there's like a guy in there who he was clearly like a scientist and he just gets pushed out of the way. And I'm like, you are a man of science. It is your job right now to throw your body in front of Crossbones and try to protect the human race.
Wait a minute.
Yes, come on. You're a man of science and you're like, I'm more important than the potential for this thing to kill millions of people.
This is a lot like coming for the janitor on the Death Star. I don't know if I accept.
Wait, hold on. The Death Star had janitors?
I mean, presumably. Don't you feel bad for those guys that got blown up?
Well, I mean, then they were...
Wow, okay.
They were...
Sorry,
what's the
you
word?
Work for fascists?
Right. Oh, yes.
Look, I'm living that freelance life.
Fascist reference.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with the problem that you have, Preeti, because it's the same problem that I have, which is that it's very one-sided. And the only excuse I could kind of come up with is that this is one of those things where you work. Do you ever work in a corporate environment where you did a thing that somebody didn't like and they didn't fire you then? So then they've got to wait until a much smaller infraction and say, well, technically that's against the rules. And that's how you get fired. It's over the thing that doesn't even really matter that much.
Yeah.
That's what this is in my mind. This is really some corporate shenanigans.
That's fair.
Except the government.
Yeah. So, yes. It's like, wait, so we let you guys do all this other stuff with no repercussions.
Right.
So now we have to take this, and I say this not to trivialize the death of many Wakandans, but they take something much smaller and actually blow it up to be like, we need to figure out a process here.
And also, not only do they have the benefit of that, but a big part of their plan is that they're not really coming for Tony. They're not coming for Steve. They're not coming for anybody that they know. They've decided they're just going to come for this strange lady who's got powers they don't understand. That's who they're going to blame. Yeah. It's all her fault. So it's great. Let's just dump all the responsibility on Scarlet Witch.
Well, because obviously, I mean, Tony Stark is a white man with money. So, like, if you think about it, like, of course you're going to go attack the woman whose emotions get a little out of control sometimes.
Yeah, and she has no, and she's kind of coming from a place of societally, culturally, no power. But her powers are so beyond reasoning, and this is true in the comics, too. I mean, Preeti, perhaps you have a better understanding of her chaos powers, but I never, like, Scarlet Witch's powers have always seemed to me to be whatever the plot requires, she can do it. That's sort of how she is, you know. That's like how House of M happens.
She's a witch, right? Like, I know we use that term in the comics in a certain way, but like at the end of the day, that's why her powers are often born of necessity, because that's who she is, and it makes sense in that way. And here too, I feel like because of the weird like Fox Disney stuff and who owns the characters, like it all got very weird. Because in the comics, you know, she's a mutant. She is Magneto's daughter, and.
Oh, that makes so much sense now.
Yeah.
Because so I know a lot more about X-Men than I do. Okay, all right.
Yeah, so it makes sense in that way, but it the way Joss Whedon introduced them in Ultron, it's very strange. And honestly, like, I just have to say this because I'm going to be mad. I've been mad for years. How dare you kill Pietro? How dare you?
That was the deal they made, though, because X-Men was gonna have Quicksilver and Marvel Disney was gonna have Scarlet Witch. That was the deal.
They're such a great sibling team with some creepiness in the comics, but like they could have had the potential to be such a great sibling team. So Scarlet Witch, it's so weird and not weird how they represent her in this movie, because she's treated as such a child. They treat her like she's like 15, you know, but still try to set up this weird relationship with Vision. It's a very strangely written role.
Yeah, they just don't really quite know what they're doing with her.
No.
The one thing that they know that they're doing is blaming her for the situation that they're in right now. So that's happening. Government's mad. Smash cut. And then we're with Tony Stark. And he's gonna give a bunch of money to people in order to help them go out and create new things and make the world better. And they do this really weird thing where he's showing a hologram of himself young, seeing his parents for the last time, and having a conversation that is the conversation that he wishes that this is how it went, right? And it's the last time he sees them alive. Gee, gosh, they shoehorn this in for reasons that will become clear later, but I've seen movies before, so I can already tell where it's going. But yeah, I don't know why he shows this technology other than for plot reasons, but he does. He's given a bunch of money to people. Pepper Potts is not there. He's looking at the screen of what he's supposed to say. She's not there. He's feeling kind of glum about it.
We see a Jim Rash cameo, which makes me really happy.
Get some community love.
Totally. Well, and then, okay, so then we get into this part that I was asking you guys about. Who is this lady in the basement?
Ugh, so this is such a shame because Alfre Woodard is like an incredible actress, as we know in other Marvel
shows. I thought we'd see more of her in this movie when I saw her. I was like, yes! And then I realized that she was not.
No, she's literally nobody. She's not a name character.
Yeah, she's just there to like manifest Tony's guilt which is so frustrating.
His name was Charlie Spencer. You murdered him. Who's going to avenge my son, Stark? He's dead. And I blame you.
I really do love this movie. I know it sounds like I'm mad at it, but like...
Yeah, I was going to say, you seem to be coming off very negative for someone who was very much advocating for this film last night.
Well, it's hard because at the beginning is so rough because I side with Cap most often, and there's so much Tony that pulls us into the big plot stuff, and Tony just makes me so angry.
Yeah, and it's very frustrating because we know on the positive side, having seen the film, that we're about to get some Wakandan stuff, and that's cool. Like, we're getting Chadwick Boseman is entering this film. This is our first real look at this guy. This is a very big deal. We haven't had a hero like this that we know is going to get their own movie since friggin' Blade. It's been a long ass time, and that's great. But at the same time, we're getting this son character who died in Sokovia, who we never see. And yep. Then basically, like, your black woman character being a mourning, pissed off mom, and then she's gone. And that sucks. That really sucks. It's very frustrating, and it's even more frustrating because it's Alfre Woodard, somebody who is so talented, and just as you said, Preeti, we already know is great on the Marvel Netflix series Luke Cage, and I mean, go on IMDb and see for yourself. She has a storied career. She is incredibly talented, and for her to just basically get 5 minutes so that Tony can have some man pain is not what I want for her.
Isn't that the story of Hollywood, though?
Yes it is.
100%. But yeah, like, we have this presentation with Tony Stark, which, to your point, does some sort of story building, of some of which I don't follow. But then, like, we quickly learn...
You get dead parents.
Yeah, I know. Like, we feel bad for him. And then we immediately learn 12 Wakandans were killed by Scarlet Witch by accident. We see a ton of other characters sort of kind of like, to your point, it's like almost like a smash cut of like, okay, by the way, these are the rest of the people in this movie. Yeah. because we go and see that Secretary of State meeting with Tony Stark and the rest of the Avengers where he drops a Sokovia Accord on the table and he's like, what? You're going to have repercussions for your actions.
Wait, it's the Secretary of Defense, right?
Is it? I thought it was the Secretary of State.
It's the U.S. Secretary of State, Thaddeus Ross.
I forgot.
So they come in and say, which is maybe my least favorite line in the whole movie. I don't have it right in front of me, but that thing where it's like, "Where's Thor? If I lost a megaton warhead or whatever," and it's like that really just made me so goddamn salty.
Tell me, Captain, do you know where Thor and Banner are right now? If I misplaced a couple of 30 megaton nukes, you can bet there'd be consequences.
Because they're people. Those are he's not actually a warhead. That's a human being or a god.
Or a god.
I was going to say, actually, he's a god.
But they're people. But they're talking about Hulk too. They're talking about Bruce Banner, and Bruce Banner is a human.
Yeah.
And to treat him as a weapon of mass destruction, to speak to him in those terms only, is shitty. It's not cool, and it's very frustrating to watch them say this stuff, and then watch Steve and Tony. Both have takes that I'm not sure about. Tony is the reason that this stuff is happening. But I'll say this.
Because he feels guilty, right?
Alfre Woodard may be a throwaway character in that moment. But this stuff, like we talked about, like the stuff that happened in Lagos, that's not what this is about.
Right.
The reason the Sokovia Accords are happening are because of Dodoy Sokovia. And Sokovia wouldn't have happened if not for Tony being a fascist. Like, he did something that is pure fascism. He literally decided that he was going to build a robot army that was going to keep everybody safe. And surprise, surprise, he used technology that he didn't understand, that gained sentience, and ta-da, a whole country gets obliterated. So it's all his fault, and he's using that to the absolute worst purpose. He's basically saying, I was a bad fascist, so now let's let these idiots who also don't know what they're doing be in charge. It's not a great solution.
It's very in line with the character, though, right? It's very much...
I believe it.
I feel like they tried really hard to take what the premise in... So the premise in the comics for the Civil War event was the Superhero Registration Act. And it's whether you basically become a weapon for the government to be used at the government's behest. And Cap is against it because what the hell? and Tony is all in. And Tony goes like hardcore fascist in the comics, like even more so than I think in the movies, because they still have to make him sympathetic for us. Although I don't know how much they succeed.
And of course Tony's into this because, again, Tony's not like, okay, I'm going to say this with massive air quotes. He's not a quote unquote real superhero. Like, I understand right. that, like, he's a mortal, right? He's a man mm-hmm. who has all these things at his disposal, which I'm not against because I'm a huge, like, to me, Batman, one of the greatest superheroes of all time. But, like, he's a mortal where you have, like, someone like Cap is like, I'm sorry, I'm pretty sure that I've been changed into this person and now you want to control me. And right. it's like, no, that sounds like some fascist stuff right there. We don't need that.
Right. So, yeah, the thing with Tony is that he is ceding control, mm-hmm. but he's doing it on his terms. That's why he's the one coming in. It's like he's written the Sokovia Accords. He's trying to make it so that he still has a position of power by being the one coming in and saying, we have to sign this, which is exactly something that, you know, like, it's exactly something Tony would do. That is the thing to keep in mind. There's a lot of thoughts that I have about this movie, but they are definitely writing Tony exactly how I think Tony would behave. Like, I'm not yes. surprised by his behavior. I think this is 100% accurate. I just wish that Tony was in therapy beyond talking to Bruce Banner as Bruce Banner falls asleep that one time.
Right.
Because any therapist would have told him, like, hey, this is not you ceding control. This is you trying to retain it and expect everybody else to do this thing that's not a good idea that still... Basically, I mean, and as it turns out in the film, he is still kind of the one in charge, you know? They mm-hmm. put him off on the quest, but he's still, once he's out in the field, he's basically making the decisions that he wants to make. He just wants right. to stay the boss, and he's found a way to use this government contract in order to stay that way, and everybody else is going to have to be subservient to him. It's fucked up. And he's got some people that are saying this makes sense. Rhodey thinks that this makes sense. Nat is saying that this makes sense, but a Vision is I think not there at the time, but ultimately is sort of saying, comes in and says this makes a kind of sense. But, you know, you've got Steve and he is not down to clown with this at all.
Well, you see, you basically see the rift starting to happen and you're starting to try to, you start to see like what side everyone is going to kind of take on the Sokovia Accord. So
yeah.
that gets us ready for like, oh, there's clearly going to be a disagreement about this and who is going to quote unquote come out on top at the end.
Yeah. So it's pretty intense. You can see this stuff is going to start to happen. And also,
well, then
someone's dead. Right?
Oh,
isn't,
yeah.
Am I missing something? Because it's like that, and then Peggy's dead.
And then
But before Peggy, we meet Zemo.
Oh, good grief. Okay, take it away.
Wait, do you not? Oh my God, this was where I was like, God damn it, is Hydra still involved in stuff? Like, because this is where Zemo shows up. We see that little red book from the beginning that they were reading words out to Bucky.
Yeah, Bucky's safe words. Yep.
And he's trying to, you know, he basically is trying to figure out, he's looking for who Bucky is, right? Like the experiment that was done on Bucky. And he's got that dude hanging upside down with his
so
head
creepy.
In the water that's going to like eventually rise. It was like some Titanic stuff. It made me real nervous.
You could only be dying for your pride.
That guy was Hydra.
No, but, I know. But like, it was just like, I was like, I'm over it. Like, I get it. Can't we just get rid of Hydra? Like, someone just kill Nazis
How
and move on. Like,
How
that
I
is
wish.
All I want. Like,
I'm
is
good.
It so hard to just get rid of Nazis is my question.
Clearly, it's not the...
Speaking of fascism.
Yeah. I just, look, here's the thing. Every time someone says, Hell Hydra, somebody whispers that into someone else's ear, it's like the opposite of an angel getting their wings. Like a devil gets its horns.
Oh my God,
did
you see the tweet that Courtney put out that's like the Hail Hydra suit salute looks like the Steve Holt salute from Arrested Development? I like lost my shit. I was like, this is so good. Because it's like Hail Hydra, but I was like, no, that's what Steve Holt does. Yeah. It's
Steve
so
Holt.
Good. Steve Holt.
All right. So that happens. We're getting this sense of there's a bad guy out there who wants to do stuff to Bucky.
Yeah, it's a quick scene, but it's supposed to set up a little bit of the, you know, this Zemo character and a little bit of his.
Right.
You know.
And we're all supposed to think the only person who does weird shit to Bucky is Steve. Those are the rules.
Yeah.
So that's happening. And then.
But then we get to the
Steve gets the call. And
Peggy
Carter.
Peggy.
Maybe my top three, maybe even favorite characters in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is dead. It's a drag. So he goes down to be at this funeral service And we find out that the woman who was living across the hall from him, who is a spy, was kind of keeping an eye on him, is not just any old spy, but is in fact the niece to Peggy Carter, Sharon Carter.
Well, Sharon is, I think, the most frustrating through line of these movies.
Yes.
Yeah, I wasn't, I was kind of like, ugh, but she comes up to the lectern to like do her eulogy, and you just see Anthony Mackie Falcon looks up and then looks at Cap, and he's like, are you seeing this? Like, their eyebrows just go up, and I was like, oh, this is so good.
It was right, just like they didn't complete know. They didn't know the
I know,
deal.
But it was like nonverbal communication to like to a T, where he's just like, are you, come on.
Like, so, girl, yeah. Did you see this?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So she gives the speech that Cap gives. Right, that's the speech that we get in the comics. The yeah. No, you move is a Cap speech.
It is a Cap speech.
But we get it from Sharon, because clearly Sharon knows about the Sokovia Accord. She's in on that shit. And she obviously is Team Cap. She already knows how Steve's going to react to this stuff. She's thinking the same thing, which is that these things are bogus. And so she delivers a eulogy basically saying, if my aunt was here right now, she would not be down for the Sokovia Accords. That's basically what she's saying. She doesn't say it in those words, but it's clearly what's up. And they go, they bury Peggy, and then it's just Steve in the church, and Sharon comes through, and like they have like the quick talk, and he knows that he's not going to say yes, that he's not going to sign the accords.
Well, no, he has that chat with Black Widow, actually.
Oh, yeah, right. That's what right.
She comes by.
Danny, stop mixing up the women. God
damn it. But yeah, no, because Black Widow shows up and he's like, you know, I'm not going to sign it. And she goes, I know, that's not why I'm here. She's like, I'm here to be for, like, to be here for you. But that's essentially where you start. Again, you're seeing like Cap's like, nah, I'm drawing a line in the sand and I am not signing my body over to the government.
Yeah. So Nat comes through. I'm sorry that I confused two white women. Maybe maybe if they wrote them more distinctly. So here we are, and now it's time.
And then we get Chadwick.
Yes.
Can so I just excited. Tell you, like, the minute he opened his mouth in the theater and started speaking, I almost fell out of my chair.
So, admittedly, I really had no idea how much Black Panther we were going to get in this movie, and mm-hmm. I am so on board for it.
Well,
like,
and they kind
so
of
excited.
They kind of had to, because they knew at
to.
This point that the actual Black Panther movie was 2 goddamn years away. So they had
okay.
better put a lot of him in this movie. They have got to. If they don't, they're going to look real bad. So they do, and that's the right choice. So now we're getting to we're going to sign those accords. So T'Challa's there with his dad, who's the king. That's T'Chaka. And he's talking with Nat. He's talking with folks. He's being very chill. And everyone's kind of disappointed that Steve's not there. But they're going to get it done. T'Chaka gets up, give a speech, saying, you know, like, this is not going to really undo what happened, but, you know, this is a step in the right direction. And then
Wakanda is proud to extend his hand in peace.
Everybody get down!
T'Challa sees that it's going to happen. He tries to save his dad. It doesn't work out. T'Chaka's dead.
My heart is broken.
It's
I
really, it's
T'Challa
a drag.
Just
once again, thank goodness in 2 years from then, we got more of King T'Chaka. Thank
yeah.
goodness for that. And so now the understanding is people believe that was Bucky.
Yeah.
Right? They've got some evidence that suggests it was Bucky. And of course, immediately Steve jumps into action because he doesn't buy it. He doesn't think that's accurate. He's got to go.
He knows his friend.
He does. I mean, here's the thing. I don't know how well I would feel I knew my friend at that point. Maybe this makes me a bad friend, but I'd be, hashtag questioning at this point as to whether or not it was Bucky or not. Like, I would hope not. I would want to give him a shot. But Steve is really just immediately saying, no, absolutely not. Bucky didn't do this. And he's getting some help, right? He's trying to figure out where Bucky's going to be, and he gets some help from Sharon Carter, right? I'm not making it. I got
oh,
it
no.
right this time.
You actually did get it right this time.
Right.
I remember she gives
the
lunch.
Right white lady.
She's like, I'm reporting this to my boss immediately after this, so you don't have much of a lead
so
time.
So go do it. Go do it.
Go for it. And they found Bucky. I love this. All of my scenes are just like the place. So it's like they're in Bucharest. I don't know why I wrote that down. Like, it was an important fact. But like, this leads into one of the most epic fight scenes in this movie, where Bucky just takes all those cops down.
Well, him and Steve together, it's a team up.
I know, but there's like some scenes though, like where Bucky is there with like 12 guys around him, and it's just like boom, 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 and it's like some John Wick stuff that I'm like, yes, I am here for this.
Oh yeah, I mean, look, this is just, they can't actually show Steve and Bucky have sex, so instead they do this. And it
works. I mean, he is the great love of Steve's life, so I'm glad we get to watch them like work in tandem, because they clearly have such a wonderful connection.
Yeah, it's very, it's, yeah, yep. Yes, I think Sting would call it tantric, but, you know, I mean, I'm just saying, not me, Sting, but yeah, so they deal with it, they dispatch, they try to get on their way. What happens next? I'm actually flying by the seat of my pants.
Oh, really?
Here.
Okay, I can really help you here, because then Black Panther shows up.
Oh, right, that's right.
And it's another great, this movie is so chock full of excellent fight choreography and action
so
sequences.
Much.
Like,
yeah.
They're not, they never felt too long.
But this is the T'Challa hates cars scene, right? This is like, he doesn't like cars.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like Angel on the Angel TV series hated doors. He was always breaking through doors. T'Challa really hates cars.
Wait, and so there's like that epic thing there on the motorcycle.
Oh, that
like,
scene is so hot.
Sam, Southwest rooftop.
Who the hell's the other guy?
About to find out.
So good. And then, oh my God, and then at some point in this scene, Falcon kicks the tail of a helicopter. He's just like,
yeah,
I got
he does.
This. Ba-choom. And I was like, what just happened? You just kicked a helicopter.
Yeah, it's
because,
good.
Like,
this is, yeah.
It's so good. And because, like, yes, Bucky is the great love of Steve's life, but Sam Wilson loves Steve so much. And I love how much Sam Wilson loves Steve. Like, he is just, no questions asked. I'm with you, like, side by side, any second of the day.
Yeah, and it's quality entertainment. This whole scene is sort of a little taste of Winter Soldier in the middle of this movie, right?
Yeah.
It's a very Winter Soldier-y part of the film.
Oh, and then my favorite part in this is there's at one point Black Panther gets, like, knocked off, and then he latches onto Falcon and, like, uses him as, like, a way to, like, buoy himself. I was like, wait, this is all, it's like a dude on a skateboard holding onto the back of a bus. It's so good.
Yeah, so they lose. They all get pulled in.
And then my notes literally say, crazy crash ensues and Don Cheadle shows up in some big ass suit. That is a literal note I wrote.
Oh,
it's he's War Machine shows up.
Yeah, Don Cheadle rules. Now we can end the podcast. There's actually nothing else to say.
And that's it. and then this is when also, so like this whole kind of, this whole fight ends in like some epic like standoff, and then T'Challa pulls off the mask, and we're like, oh,
and I was like,
we know who the Black Panther is. But so after that, Danny, we, you know, obviously they all get arrested, which we're going to see soon where they end up. But we have a quick little scene with Vision and Wanda in the, where she tries to leave.
Oh, and he says no.
Yeah, he's a little like, nah, bitch, you're
saying. You're a prisoner. Not a prisoner, but a prisoner. You know, you're
a prisoner of your emotions.
You're grounded.
But also, yeah, you're a prisoner, but the cell you're in is very big and plush. So that's fine, right? It's cool, right? It's a little 50 Shades. But I don't know. It's kind of weird that he's trying to control her, but be like, but it's cool, right? Because we're on a rich man's land.
Yeah.
So that's dope.
And
you're like, is it?
That whole scene exists for the foreshadowing that, like, eventually what you're going to find out is that she has some ability to control him or distract him in a way which no one thinks is possible, right? So it's like, that scene is kind of like, it's a quick blip, but it's just like, oh, we're going to tease the fact that, like, shit, maybe shit's going to happen with the two of them. Because we quickly get back into seeing Winter Soldier. He's in this, like, crazy, like, I don't know.
Plexiglass prison.
Yeah,
thing.
I don't know. It's like some Magneto prison shit, honestly, if you think about it. And then we see the Avengers are in another truck. And then it's, well, we've got Black Panther, Falcon, and Cap. And this is where, oh, man, Chadwick has this great line.
How long do you think you can keep your friend safe from me?
Oh, he's gonna take him down. He killed his daddy. It's just like so good. And then they, and like the other, there's some other really good lines here because they get to this sort of like prison facility. And that's when we find out that Cap and Falcon and Black Panther are actually not arrested per se.
Right. There's an understanding that things are gonna be chill. Hey, man, Steve, now that you're here, maybe sign that shit.
Yeah, and also we took your shield.
Yeah.
But literally Falcon at one point goes, I better not look out the window and see anyone flying around in that. And as they're like packing up his wings.
Oh,
it
yeah.
It's just like, you don't touch my radio.
Yeah. It's very cute. Like they're like, they call it like bird stuff or something.
Yeah.
And he gets really mad.
Yeah.
He's like, bird suit, come on.
Yeah. So, you know, they think everything's chill. But of course, it's Helmut Zemo. He's the guy who's going in there, who's going to talk to Bucky. And he's got the book of unsafe words. And he reads them.
Oh, he reads them.
He reads them the filth.
In all their jumbled glory.
He reads them good.
Oh, yeah, he does.
And there was a scene where you see him practicing the words, too. He's really like, it's like when you know you're going to get a fight with somebody and you really practice that thing in front of the mirror. It's just like that, except not at all like that. So he says the words. And then and Bucky gets really mad because he knows what's going to go down. And then Bucky now is trying to get away, trying to do a thing. But listen, it's tragic. And yet
it's so
also,
heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. But then so Zemo's trying to get some information. Right. That's the thing. He's like trying to get into a specific case, a specific op that the Winter Soldier went on. And then he sends Bucky off on a distracty thing so that Zemo can get away. And get off on what it is that he wants to do, the direction that he wants to head towards. So that is, yes, it's very heartbreaking. But also, this is also the scene where Bucky tries to get away in a helicopter. And and Steve chases after him.
Arms.
And does the thing with the arms where you
the
get
arms.
The most perfect shoulder-to-waist ratio in human creation.
Like, absurd.
I actually don't know that there is a hotter scene in the history of the MCU. It's so hot.
I don't think there is.
It is mind-blowing.
Well,
so, like, I don't know. You guys were talking about this scene last night, and, like, yeah, it's cool, but, like, it didn't blow me away that much.
Oh,
maybe
man.
It was, like, when you saw it on the big screen.
Yeah, I could see
there
that.
There was this moment where you're like, my entire vision is just shoulders, arms, and waist.
I needed an intermission. I can't even lie. It was a lot. But it's great, you know, and they managed to keep Bucky, and Bucky kind of comes out of it a little bit, and now it's going to be bad times, right? Because everybody's supposed to be on board now because shit's bad, so just sign the papers.
Right, well, then Tony, and then we're about to see our Preeti's favorite part of this movie, I would
yes,
think.
We're getting very close. We're getting very close to that. So, yeah, so Steve and everybody else kind of, like, they dash off. To go deal with
but
the problem.
Wait. I do want to say my favorite, actually what I think is the hottest part of this movie.
All right.
Is when T'Challa walks out with his Dora Milaje and she says,
move or you will be moved.
As entertaining as that would be.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Yes. So hot. Loved
it. Oh my goodness. That is like the most iconic, amazing scene, I think, where you're just like, I can't wait for Black Panther. I want to die.
Well, I also was like, I'm definitely down to watch her and Nat fight.
Right. All right. So now it's bad times. It's a sad situation. Everybody is going to be mad at each other. But Tony needs some help, right? Because, like, a lot of people are now not siding with him. He's got to bring Cap in. And he's only got Nat and Rhodey and I guess Vision. And so he kind of feels like he needs some backup. So he goes off and gets Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
So yeah, he shows up. He's creepy to Aunt May, as Tony yep. does. He creeps on her.
As all screenwriters apparently are going to do, but whatever.
Yeah until the end of time.
He recruits Babyface Spider-Man.
Yep, and he's like, hey, come with me, this is the thing. And they do have a whole conversation, right?
Yes, and it's actually a really great conversation, but what I find the best is, like, they don't say with great power comes great responsibility, but they say as much when Peter says, when you do the things that I can, but you don't, and then the bad things happen, they happen because of you. But what Tony is fighting for is to strip them all of the agency to do that, to do the things that they should be able to do.
Yes.
Like, it's such a cognitive dissonance, and I don't know how much they want to examine that, but it drives me bananas.
I think intellectually, it's actually my favorite scene in the movie because, I mean, like, I don't think they set out for that to be as great a scene as it is, but yes, exactly because of that. Because the thing is, Pete's saying this thing, and Tony is looking at him going, this kid gets it, because he really thinks that they're fighting the same fight in exactly the same way, but they're not.
Nope.
And I think that's great. I love that dissonance. I actually think that that's one of the strengths of the film is that Tony is so wrongheaded, but he thinks that him and Pete are thinking the same thing.
Right. It's what he says to Peter when he says to, like, he said that you think you're right and that makes you dangerous. Like, it's such a self-reflection there, and it just kills me that there is ever a sense that, like, maybe Tony was right. Like, that's a message they tried to, like, present in terms of marketing the movie, because I'm like, he's not right. He's just not. He's very wrong.
Yeah, I agree completely. So, yeah, so they're doing that. Cap is off getting his own team on board. He gets Ant-Man. Ant-Man's going to help
well,
out.
Well, also, Hawkeye goes to get Wanda, right? Like, that happens here, where Hawkeye has to fight Vision, sort of, but really it's Wanda who does it, but it's this weird scene where they keep every iteration of Hawkeye is, like, a tiny inch closer to Matt Fraction's Hawkeye, but it never quite gets there.
Yeah, I wish. It's just, I don't know if it's ever gonna, maybe someday, but it's not this day. No. It's close. It's really close. So, yeah, they get Wanda out of that situation. So now we've got the teams. Cap versus Tony. And now we get the scene.
The big scene.
This is the scene that when people think about Civil War, I know we've been talking about it for like 40 friggin' minutes, but
because this movie's so long.
This is the scene that people think of, right? This
Under
is like
Bruce.
Yeah, your kid fell asleep for the first half of the film, but they woke up for this shit. It is the realest goddamn thing. It's the most event comic thing I am convinced has ever happened up until this point. It's not until you get to Thanos way later that you get an event scene like this that's really this kind of level. So now here we are, and we're at an airport, and everyone's going to fight, but everybody still wants to be friends, and yes, an underoos.
Well, it's like Vision comes down and he like draws the line with this laser beam in between everybody, and it's like, let's get ready to rumble.
Oh yeah, yes.
So I feel like we need to clear the air though, because Danny, you found Peter to be annoying during this sequence, and I wholeheartedly agree and disagree.
Okay, so here's the thing. It's just that there's one too many quips. I think if they had just toned it down,
but
like maybe like 15%, I would have been fine.
Have you met Spider-Man? He's super annoying. Like, that's his thing, is how many sequences in the comics have we seen where he's fighting? And, like, Tony Stark straight up was like, could you stop? Could you please stop? Like, Cap doesn't tell people that Peter was possessed or whatever by Doc Ock because he found him to be less annoying.
I guess I just, like, I appreciate the idea of saying, let's make him really true to the comic rendition, because we've made 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 movies where he's not. And that's great. You know, yeah, I mean, literally, like, the rest of those movies can go home. And I say that as somebody that really likes Spider-Man too, but they're not really Spider-Man movies. But I just, I don't know. I think there's such a delicate balance in the ecosystem of that scene that it just, he aggravates me. Like by like the third, you can fly, you got a metal arm. Like, I get
it. I love it.
Like, I get it.
Like, you're so cute.
But do I need by volume this much? I'm very happy that we're getting Spider-Man in the way that he's actually supposed to be. That's cool. But I just, like, I'm not even saying none. I'm just saying maybe 10 to 15% less. That's it. it's close. Maybe I'm picking nits on it, but yeah, so they have this big fight. It is definitely the scene that your kid's going to wake up and see. It's very exciting. It's a big action piece. We see that Ant-Man can also be a big giant man. That's a huge thing that happens.
Yeah.
That conflict resolution happens by somebody remembering that old movie Star Wars.
Which is totally him pretending that he doesn't know what Star Wars is, by the way.
But he, like, makes everybody feel bad, and that's kind of hilarious. See, I'm not saying take that away. That was fantastic. But yeah, they take him down like he's an AT-AT, or an AT-AT, if you want to say it wrong, but you think it makes more sense. Bite me, Star Wars fans. But Yeah, so like it goes down. How does that resolve? Remind me, Megan, because you know.
So basically, we know that Cap and Bucky get away, and they get away because because Black Widow kind of stops Black Panther from attacking them. So they get on that little ship. They disappear. And I actually wrote Spider-Man is fired by Iron Man because he kind of tells him to go home. He's just like, go home. It's over. You're done.
Yeah.
Which made me a little sad.
I mean, you got to save him for later.
But then you have the iconic line from Nat where she goes,
I said I'd help you find him, not catch him. There's a difference.
Oh, this girl's got loyalties. You know it.
Yeah. Her and I really respected the fact that throughout, Cap and Nat have always been tight buds.
Yeah.
Like every once in a while they try to make it seem like maybe they're going to do a romance thing, but the fact that they never actually have is fantastic. Please never go there. Completely unnecessary.
So, we don't need romance for Natasha. Let her be.
Just let her be a cold-blooded killer and I'm cool with that.
But yeah, but they're tight buds. They help out and now we're finding out, right? Now the truth starts to really come out.
Yeah.
Right? That Tony's wrong because of freaking course he is. Bucky didn't kill King T'Chaka. That's not what went down. It was some other dude entirely. They just managed to fake it. But we've got people in jail. Anthony Mackie in jail.
Well, the whole thing happens. Vision shoots up with his laser up.
Oh yeah,
he hits War Machine who gets down. So then we find out that he's still alive, but that he's severely injured. And Iron Man does that like right into the chest to Falcon, like knocks
him
over.
Which is so rude because it wasn't his fault.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it's pretty tragic. But and we don't really know. We do like basically we're told that that Rhodey may never walk again. But I'm like, at some point in time, they're either going to give him a Tony Stark thing or he'll get like a magic T-shirt that says protect trans kids and then he'll be all right. So shout out to Don Cheadle. So now we've got people in jail. Tony is visiting with them. He's trying to figure out where Cap and Bucky have gone because he's got this info that suggests that, yes, in fact, Bucky was innocent the whole time. So he's ready to find a piece and get on Zemo with Steve in order to stop Zemo from doing what it is that we think that he's going to do, which is wake up all these other Winter Soldiers, of which apparently there's a whole bunch of them. And we can't have that because one is problematic enough. And all these other ones around is going to mean you could take down. Basically, the suggestion is that you could take down an entire country. And it's like, that's Tony's job.
And for gosh sake, watch your language.
Got him. So he goes off and also Black Panther is kind of spying what's going on. You know, he's like the Boba Fett, he's just kind of being sneaky and following around. And so they get some place to go to like the frozen tundras of wherever a stand wherever they are. And they think that they're going to stop Zemo and Tony kind of has like a sort of like very, very tentative armistice. Steve's a cool dude, so he doesn't want to fight. He doesn't want to fight Tony. They're friends. He doesn't want that at all.
No, but this is where Tony learns that Bucky killed his mom.
But wait. So they killed both his parents.
Well, yeah.
But the deal is, the real thing is that, it was never really about that. Like, this dude doesn't really want that stuff. Zemo doesn't really want to wake up the Winter Soldiers. He doesn't really want them around at all. But he also doesn't want the Avengers around. He wants to destroy them from the inside, which I guess he just decided he was going to take one from the Ultron playbook, because that's exactly what Ultron also wanted to do. He basically shows them the video that reveals that Bucky was responsible for the death of Tony's parents. And we also find out that Steve knew.
Dun, dun, dun.
Huge. This is the most I am shocked. I actually don't know if I can accept this.
But how did
Steve knew?
Steve knew?
Yes, it shocked me that he knew.
And how did he know? I was so confused by that.
How did he know?
I think he says that he didn't know it was Buck, right? I'm guessing that he guessed that he might have had suspicions that he never followed through on because it was too painful for him. Because, he says, Tony asked, did you know? And Steve says, I didn't know it was him. So he might
have
guessed.
But he knew. He was pretty sure. And he really does keep it. He really keeps that from Tony. And I am very surprised. It's a very un-Steve-like thing to do.
I'm actually not... all that surprised because, like, you know, Tony says once they start fighting and that whole scene where Steve says, he's my friend, and Tony says, so was I, or whatever it was. I don't think they were ever friends. We never see a friendship, a true friendship between Tony and Steve in the way that we see with Steve and Nat or Steve with and Sam and Steve and Bucky. Like, that doesn't exist in the MCU. And so, I don't know. I'm kind of like, I see it. I see where Steve's fallibility, is that a word? Comes to light here because Bucky has always been the thing that drives him to make an irrational decision.
Yeah, that's true. I'll give you that for sure.
Yeah, it's an interesting moment, and that's it. At this point, once this cat is out of the bag, that friendship is obliterated.
Oh yeah, and I mean,
and also T'Challa's there.
Well, we get this epic fight scene, right? So you've got Captain America and Iron Man. You think Cap is down for the count, and then Cap just fucking takes Iron
so
Man
good.
Out, like
so good,
shield right into the chest, just like goes, you know, like goes for the jugular in a way, you know, like without killing him. That scene ends with this like crazy. It's kind of like a long, slow pull-out shot of just Iron Man defeated sitting on the floor.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh my God, like what is about to happen? Like where are Bucky and Cap going? And there's like this great part where Cap is walking out with the shield and Tony does this like, ugh, super, he's like, that's not yours. And Cap just like throws it on the ground.
Yeah.
Like,
fine, I love it so much.
Take your government property back. I don't need it because Narc. I'm an actual superhero.
It's tight. It's really good.
It's such a good ending. And I will say, I think the conversation then that T'Challa has with Zemo is excellent because like T'Challa has just kind of been watching it. And this was such a great set up for the T'Challa we'll eventually see in Black Panther, of that I'm not going to be consumed by vengeance in the way that everyone around me is. Like, I'm going to learn my lesson here, and I'm going to make sure that you stand for punishment for your part in it. Like, it was just such a great T'Challa moment.
Yeah,
there's
agree.
So many good T'Challa moments in this movie
that's
just get
true.
Me so excited. but so like Zemo's in prison now. We see a little moment with Tony Stark and Don Cheadle. What is Don Cheadle's actual name in this movie?
Rhodey.
Sorry, there you go. Sorry. He'll always just be Don Cheadle. Don Cheadle is Don Cheadle. Where you see he's trying to do rehabilitation on his legs, and we're like, what will happen to him? But then Tony gets kind of like what's going to bring us to the end of this movie. He gets that package from Cap, mm-hmm. where Cap kind of says, you know, the Avengers are a faithful group of people and that he can't let them down. And we have that iconic line that closes the movie.
I promise you, if you need us, I'll be there.
Oh, my guy.
He rules.
So good.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What do we think the best scene is, and what's like a best line?
Okay, for me, best scene is definitely where Bucky beats the shit out of all of those cops, and Cap is sort of like, Cap is like, ugh, do I knock you down but save my friend? I don't know what to do. So that, to me, done, best scene, like, brought me all the John Wick feels I wanted. What about you, Preeti?
I'm going to say the Peter Parker introduction, because I've been waiting for it for like a decade.
Thanks. Well, I could have stuck the landing a little better. It's just a new suit. Well, it's nothing. Mr. Stark, it's perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, we don't really need to start a conversation.
Okay.
That is just everything that I wanted from an introduction of Peter into the MCU.
I mean, I still give it to the airport sequence. I just like it, just as a matter of fact, that it's this scene where the good guys fight each other and it's an awesome piece. And whether you are an adult or a child, you are going to have a good time. I just, mm-hmm. I mean, like, it ain't that deep, but I love it. It's definitely, that's the reason why it was, when they were promoting the movie, this was the scene they were promoting.
Countermeasures ready.
Let's kick his ass.
So, lines that we like.
For me, anything that comes out of T'Challa's mouth. So, done. Bye.
All right. Do you have a specific one, Preeti?
I'm going to say move or you will be moved.
Yes.
There's so much couched in that line and so much potential for where that story ends up going. Ooh, gives me the chills.
Yeah. I don't even know if I can. It's really, really, really hard to pick a single line.
Do you want my other one that I had?
Oh, what one is it? I'll hear it. I'll hear
so
it.
So it's from Crossbones in the beginning.
What is what?
And he says,
I don't want it. I don't.
Jesus, for dropping a building on my face.
Yeah. Oh. I really like the give and take where Cap in the middle of the fight asks Spider-Man where he's from.
I love that. Oh.
And he's like Queens, and he's like Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
That was good. That was
cute.
Tight.
I'll
and it was like,
that.
Hey,
that's
we have
a great moment.
There's no trains that get us to each other, but we still see each other.
You got heart, kid. Where are you from?
Queens.
Brooklyn.
So, yeah. All right. So let's take that. I don't know that there's really a lot to say. I mean, like, so directorially, I feel like this is like, now we really know, right? The Russo brothers are doing.
Yeah.
They're in it. Like, anything that's going to be event is them. They've got a good style. They know what they're doing. Post-credit sequence. These are relevant in the sense that they set up the two really important movies.
Yeah.
Right? The first one is setting up Black Panther. We know that we're going to get a Black Panther movie. We're waiting two goddamn years for it, but it's coming.
You know, if they find out he's here, they'll come for him.
Let them drive.
But it's coming, and it's worth it. And the scene where they zoom back and you see Wakanda is incredible, right? We've been waiting for years to see a world that wasn't kind of America-centric, right? And get to see Black Panther, like, such an iconic character. It's so good.
So good.
Yeah. And then the other post-credit sequence, which is going to be a little bit more immediately important because we've only got 1 year to wait, is we see Peter. Aunt May comes in to nurse the black eye that he got from some guy from Brooklyn named Queen, named Steve. And he had a really big friend. And Peter's got this new gadget on his arm that's shining this light above that he got from Tony.
Yeah.
And the movie literally closes on Spider-Man Will Return, which is so dope.
Who was it? Who hit you?
Some guy.
So itchy, man. God.
What's some guy's name?
Steve.
It feels
good. It is. Like, I just want to stress, like, I was in 2015 when the Sony agreement was reached. I was, like, in India, I think, and people were texting me, and it was, like, 2 in the morning there, and I was like, this is the best day of my life!
Yeah, it's huge. And, yes, I think in many ways, knowing that Black Panther was coming, I mean, knowing that it was going to be a Ryan Coogler film, man, I didn't have any doubts about that. I knew that whenever that was coming, I knew that that was going to be the game changer, like Marvel Cinematic Universe film to end all MCU films, period.
Yep.
I knew that. But the Spider-Man thing really felt nebulous because they've tried and failed so many times that up until this point, I wasn't really sure. And then knowing like, yeah, we're for real going to get a Sony/Disney co-joint, and that at that end of the movie, them saying Spider-Man will return. I said, and kind of for the first time, this is kind of the first real Spider-Man movie. We're actually going to get it. This is amazing. So it felt huge.
Mm-hmm.
And now, so then what did all this all mean for Endgame, though?
Great question. Anything? Anything in particular? Is there something? What's relevant in your mind, Preeti, to Endgame in this film? Because it kind of nothing really that I can think of.
I think just Tony at the end of the film matters. I know it feels like it doesn't based on what we saw in Infinity War, but I think we're going to see kind of a repeat of that last sequence where he puts the secretary on hold in Endgame and in his desire to get back to the team and realize that he actually does need to work as hard as he can to partner with Cap because the two of them together are better when they're separate.
Yeah, But yeah, I don't know if there's any real hints about what's going to happen. For a second, I thought, because I watched this in Age of Ultron back to back, I thought that this was one of the movies where they actually say the words Endgame. But no, that's Age of Ultron where they say Endgame. It doesn't happen in this one. So yeah, I think it's really just in the sense that you're setting up that Thanos is going to be able to jump into a situation where people are not entirely together.
Yeah.
Like that he's going to kind of be able to come in and be able to win pretty handily. You know, it's kind of like what would happen in our society if the Democratic Party was really dissociated and fighting amongst each other so that a horrible monster could come
in.
Real. And anyway, I love keeping it positive and light. So Warvis, check in. Where on our list, on our ranking, where does this film land as far as top to bottom? Where is it in the pack?
In Sci-Fi Wire's official ranking of the MCU, Civil War ranks number 8 out of 21, just ahead of the Avengers and behind Spider-Man Homecoming.
Number 8?
Ooh, really?
I think this deserves to be higher, personally.
I agree. I'm surprised that it's so low.
Yeah, I'm not saying it deserves to be a lot higher, but I think I would put it at the bottom of the top 5, consider. It should be in the single digits at the very least. I understand there are a lot of movies, but yeah, I just feel like this movie is more than middle of the pack, personally. For all the problems that I have, it's still very enjoyable. Megan, what do you think?
I'm an unfair assessment sometimes in this because I haven't seen all of them, but like, I don't know. I thought there was a lot going on and it was really long and I just like at the 2-hour mark was like, I'm good. So I'm feeling middle ground about it. So
you've described so many Marvel movies.
Yeah,
to me,
no, it's fine. So like, it's just like if we're looking on a sliding scale, I'm content with where it is.
All right. Completely fair. All right. So those are our thoughts on Captain America: Civil War. Get hype, because tomorrow that huge film that everybody was waiting for, we'll talk about it next. Doctor Strange. It's like Tony Stark, but magic. Yeah, so stay tuned for that one.
See, I liked Doctor Strange, though.
Well, then you're
going to... I'm on that podcast.
We're going to love tomorrow's episode. Stay tuned for that.
You are going to love it.
And thank you. Thank you for listening. Please make sure that you're subscribed to 22 Days of Marvel and subscribe to all the other Sci-Fi Wire podcasts. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you here again tomorrow for Doctor Strange.